Northwest Queensland has been a hub for Australia's base metal mining industry for the past century and to this day continues to employ thousands. But there are many challenges facing the area, and the next state government will have to make some big decisions about the future prosperity of the industries that are based out there. Our Mount Isa rural reporter Eric Barker is with some business leaders from the area to discuss some of those big decisions the next state government will be facing.
Yeah, good afternoon, Ali. And what better place to be discussing the Northwest Queensland Minerals Province than the city of Mount Isa? I'm just looking out the window from the ABC studios here in Mount Isa and the smelters pumping in the background. The town's actually really busy at the moment as well. It's very hard to get a rental house and a lot of people are around the town, which has made it a bit of a buzz. I'm joined by Mick Tully, who is the owner of Carver Hydraulics and Engineering. That business does all sorts of services to the mining industry, including scaffolding and labour hire. Mick's also a councillor, but he'll be talking from the perspective of the business today. Also joined by Roland Shebig, who's the general manager of Mount Isa City Council-owned Enterprises, or MICO. MICO owned some of the big tourism geared enterprises here in Mount Isa, including the Outback at Isa Centre, as well as Buchanan Park, which is the home of the famous Mount Isa Rodeo. And on the phone from Cloncurry, I'm joined by Janessa Bidgood from Outback Auctions and Real Estate. Janessa's also a councillor there in Cloncurry, but we'll be talking real estate and from the perspective of her business in Cloncurry. Let's get straight into it all, and we'll keep it very broad to start with. I'll start with you, Mick Tully, with the state election on the horizon. From your perspective, what's the number one issue that's going to come up over the next month?
Thanks very much, Eric. I think the main objective is which government has the economic plan to get Queensland out of this recession, because prior to COVID, Queensland had the nation's highest unemployment and, you know, the lowest business confidence possibly in the complete nation. And in fact, Queensland unemployment now is actually worse than Victoria, which they're in stage four lockdown. So, you know, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing if we can get out of this recession.
Has this recession had an impact on you?
Oh, not really. I mean, it's always been difficult in Mount Isa to get people out here, especially since, you know, they brought in the fly-in, fly-out, and we've probably created that beast. I mean, you know, these mining towns and these mining communities, but I think we're going to touch on that later. But it hasn't really affected us all that much now, because the mining industry in the west, and, you know, and there's plenty of infrastructure work on the east coast at the moment, so tradespeople are, you know, reasonably difficult and hard to find.
Well, let's head to Cloncurry now. Janessa, how is it in the Curry there today, and what is the number one issue for you in the coming month?
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Beautiful in Cloncurry today. What I see as the main issue coming up in the election is probably an issue we bring up constantly: population growth in the bush. So I think, as Mick said, there's obviously, it's very hard to get qualified people. It's very hard to get people that are keen to work and want to have a go. But I think out this way, we present an enormous amount of opportunity for people that do want to work. It'd be good to see the government giving some sort of incentive to get people out this way, so that, you know, we can benefit from it and they can also experience what the bush has to give.
I mentioned before that it is very hard to get a rental house in Mount Isa as well as Cloncurry at the moment. A lot of people have been forced to relocate, at least temporarily. Do you see any certainty in that as far as population growth goes?
I do, but I think it's a long way to go. So rentals and, you know, and house prices and house sales need to happen first, and then there needs to be growth beyond that. It can't just be a case of sort of an excuse that the towns are full and that's, you know, there's people need to fly in and fly out now. As a result of that, we need to see that growth in regional areas. And I think Cloncurry in particular is one that hasn't seen growth like it should for the potential that it offers, and it's definitely, it needs to come back to government to take a bit of responsibility for that and to push for it.
And mining's obviously going to play a big part in that here in Northwest Queensland, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Tourism is another big industry here in Northwest Queensland, and Roland Shebig is very involved in that. What's the big issue for you coming up?
Well, first, we'll be opening the borders. During the season, we didn't really have over the last few months. A lot of our clients come from New South Wales and Victoria, and we had none of that, or very, very few, the one who escaped before they closed the borders. So that is affects us probably not quite as much as the Eastern Seaboard, the Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast, which are probably even more desperate than us because they can rely on daily traffic. I mean, it's a slightly different market than what we've got out here, but that is a massive issue.
Eric Barker with you on the Queensland Country Hour, talking all things state election in the northwest Queensland city of Mount Isa, in the heart of Queensland's metal mining industry, with Mick Tully, Janessa Bidgood and Roland Shebig. Let's get to the issue of mining now, because the state government has recently put money into the smelter here in Mount Isa, which means Glencore has committed to processing until 2025. I'll start with you, Mick. Processing for another 3 years, is that enough certainty for you?
Well, I mean, people sort of look at business, you know, different ways, and they, you know, some people look at short term, two to three years, others look at 10 years. I mean, I've sort of been in Mount Isa now. I came here in 84, so I've been here a fair while, and I've seen a lot of changes here in Mount Isa over those 30 years. And I mean, mining towns typically, they go up and down, but I mean, Queensland is a resource state, so people have generally grown to accept the way things are, and with rentals and housing and all that. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that that's right, but that's just the way it is in mining towns. But you know, I think one of the main things is what the government needs to do is to freeze the resource royalty rates and guarantee that there'll be no new taxes. And this will unlock new resources, investments, and create new projects here in the Northwest Minerals problem.
Is that a council policy, or is that what you'd like to see as a business owner?
That's me as a business owner, and you know, obviously to do with the, you know, the royalties and the resource tax that come out of the Northwest here. I mean, it's you know, it's billions of dollars a year, and I mean, we don't get the respect that we should from the state government. We probably get more from the federal government than we do from the state government, which is, you know, is not a good thing, I don't think.
We'll get the Cloncurry perspective on this in a moment, but just over to you, Roland Shebig, with these sort of announcements and the talk around keeping people working in the mining industry here. Does that have a bearing on the tourism industry from your perspective?
Well, it does. You know, when you fly in, fly out, if that wouldn't happen, they would spend the weekend here and use facility, explore. You would also think family and friend market is a big market segment as well. So if they have visitors and they're going to show them around, let's say around the outback, they do the hard mine tour and all those things, that is tourism as well, and that's a huge part of it. Just looking back, you know, the amount of Queensland that we had over the last couple of months, we had about 4,500, and around well over half were actually locals. So that is a big market for us and the locals.
Do you think, is this something that you'll be working, will you be working in that space from a MICO perspective to try and...
I think there's a huge market and a huge opportunity for, let's call it weekender outback experience. While the flights are going in and out, we should really try to attract some of the bigger cities to come out and just spend the weekend here and really show them what the outback is all about with all the hard work of driving out here and doing all that. I think there's a lot of opportunities as part of that.
Let's head to Cloncurry now. Janessa Bidgood, the announcement about the smelter here in Mount Isa, has that been part of discussion there in Cloncurry as well? Is that something that Cloncurry was watching?
Not particularly. It's not. I don't think it's a massive impact on Cloncurry. We've been here a long time, and I think we would make do regardless, but it's not a bad thing. I mean, any sort of investment into our region that keeps us going and keeps encouraging growth is certainly a good thing. So, yeah, we're not against it.
Just in answering that question before, both Mick Tully and Roland spoke about the local traffic. One of the big issues that governments have been facing for the last decade, really, has been the fly-in, fly-out workforce, which is a big part of the workforce in Cloncurry. What sort of work would you like to see go into to managing that workforce there in Cloncurry?
I think it's encouragement to come out here and work, and a lot of people have the argument that it's, I don't know, I guess it's more comfortable to live on the coast, but I would beg to differ. I think that if it's a chicken before the egg thing. If you could get people to live out here, we could then, we'd have the population to grow the towns and then have all those same facilities that they have on the coast. But I think a big part of getting that to happen is the incentive offered to people to work out here. So when it's a $10,000 or $15,000 difference between stepping on a plane every Wednesday and going back to the coast or spending time here, it's not that encouraging. Whereas if you could make that gap bigger, if it was the difference between earning another $50,000 or $60,000 or $100,000 to live and work here, I think you'd suddenly find people giving it a go, and then you'd see people liking it and enjoying it and bringing their families here, and then it has a flow-on effect, and immediately this area starts to grow, it starts to develop, and definitely the East Coast could use a few less people.
What about you, Mick Tully? You are an employer of fly-in, fly-out workers, which has had some of its challenges in recent months, but what's your perspective on it?
Oh, well, I mean, I've never been a fan of it. I mean, it sort of... you know, the state government sort of signed off on a lot of stuff, you know, 2010, 2011 on fly-in, fly-out mines. And I mean, it's, you know, it's just, like I said before, it's a monster we've created because we've accepted it. And, you know, if we wouldn't have accepted it back then, you know, Mount Isa would probably have 40,000 people now. And I mean, that's the sad thing about it. But,
Do you give incentives to have people live in town?
Oh, well, not in incentive. We've got, you know, a fair few houses that we rent through here that we supply accommodation for people. So we encourage them to come here. And then, but I mean, the people that do fly in and fly out, that do work for me, I mean, they fly in and fly out on their own bat. I mean, I encourage people that they need to live and reside here in Mount Isa. And you know, if they choose to fly away for a week, well, that's up to them. But, I mean, you know, my company certainly doesn't pay for it.
That's some of the incentives that Mick Tully was looking at there. I'll go to you now, Roland, because you did touch on it a bit before about the local traffic coming through and the fly-in, fly-out workforce here in Mount Isa. What's some of the work you guys have been doing to make this area a bit more exciting to live in?
Well, I mean, we're sort of in the middle of setting up a tourism, local tourism association, and the whole drive or part of that is creating more products, not just for obviously tourists flying in and flying out or driving past, but also there's more to do for the locals. And the more products you have, the more attractive staying here on the weekend it will be. There's so many areas around here where we haven't even touched on them. They haven't even been explored, where you can create some amazing events and opportunities to have a great time and then enjoy the outback for what it is.
Does that involve opening up some of the areas? Because there are a lot of nice places where locals do go that they're a bit of a local secret that people go to. Would you like to see more of those opened up?
It needs to be a very, very fine balance between, you know, this not mass tourism is like really fine sort of top-end stuff where you take four or five people to somewhere really nice and you cook them a, you know, a beautiful barbecue or a pot on a fire or something like that, just that experience. And if the local enjoy that, then that will spread and we will get more tourism following that on as well. So there is a big role for them to play here. Absolutely.
This is the Queensland Country Hour in the city of Mount Isa. I'm Eric Barker, joined by three business leaders, Mick Tully, Janessa Bidgood and Roland Shebig. I want to have a bit of a change of direction now, because an issue that comes up every year, every summer, every time it floods is roads and rail. The area gets cut off quite easily. I'll start with you, Janessa. Where would you like to see the government focus its efforts on this issue?
It's hard to really pick between roads and rail because I think they're both important. And I think if we could get the rail up to scratch, that's where most of our mining produce could go, which would then alleviate the roads to some degree. This area getting cut off by floodwater is almost a given. I don't think anyone out this way gets too cut up about it. We all look forward to the rain, and it's not that big a part of the year anyway, so it's not that big a hindrance. But yeah, I definitely think if we could reduce the amount of trucks travelling the roads to the coast and that they wouldn't need quite as much upkeep. So yeah, it'd be good to see the rail get some attention.
I might just go to Roland on that one, because tourists have to contend with trucks on the road. Is it a complaint that comes through to you at Outback Advisor?
I wouldn't say a complaint, just more like a comment. Especially if they're not used to driving in the Outback, it can be quite a scary experience. But all in all, I think the main, especially the road between us and Cloncurry here, it's actually not too bad. But it's really more when they go further out into the unsealed road where people tell us it's scary.
If you look at that road, and you might know this one a bit better, Janessa, it goes from Cloncurry to Julia Creek. For a lot of that area, the speed limit has actually been reduced on that, and there's been a lot of work that's been continuing since the 2019 floods, which did a lot of damage. Is that something that is brought up to you as an issue, Janessa?
I don't hear about it as much, but it certainly annoys me. It would be good to see that fixed up and you know, speed limits being reduced out here. I think it has an actual negative effect where people, it's a long distance road at the best of times, slowing it down to 60 and 80 zones is not helping anyone with fatigue management or getting where they're going, basically.
Where do you stand on this, Mick?
Yeah, no, I agree with Janessa about the trying to get the shift from the road, onto the rail. But I mean, to do that, they're going to have to look at the access charges on rail, which is a pretty important project. But the Queensland roads, have been neglected, over the last 4 to 5 years, and I just had a look last night, and the infrastructure spending in the last 4 years is down by $12 billion, and the backlog for North Queensland only for the maintenance of the roads is $831 million. So, I mean, with this sort of backlog and this sort of money that hasn't been spent, I mean, it has to tell you that the roads aren't in very good nick.
Does that have an impact on your business?
No, not really. I mean, it does when it comes to freight. I mean, like Janessa was saying, through the wet season. But, I mean, like, people accept that because, where we live, and, it's better off the stakeholders with all the properties and that, get their annual fall of rain, because, I mean, that's the only way that they can survive.
Well, let's finish on another hot button freight issue, which has probably been one of the biggest ones really in the last couple of years, is flights. It's still, around $1,000 to fly from Mount Isa to Brisbane return. I know, Roland, you have spoken about this issue before. Can you see any end in sight with this, with any government intervention?
Well, I mean, the Rex airline is getting supported by the government at the moment, and they got some quite cheap flights to Townsville and to Cairns, which is, I think, very encouraging. I would hope they will carry on, and if you can sort of complement that with fly in and fly out to bring more people out for the weekend, I think there's certainly mileage in doing that. But the travelling to Mount Isa, yes, has been very expensive. I haven't been here that long at all. And, when you look initially how much it was, and now it is possible to get some cheaper flights, and I really hope they will continue and encourage more people to fly out here, even just for a few days, to explore the Outback.
What about you, Mick Tully? Because even if the workforce living here and you're working on that, a lot of people would still have families on the East Coast that they would need to fly back to. Do you see the flights as a government issue?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's, like Roland said, some of the airlines here are subsidised, obviously, but, I mean, competition generally drives down prices, and I mean, until we can get, several carriers out here to do a regular service, I mean, the prices aren't going to change. I've been here, like I said, for a long time, and, I mean, we've had several investigations and all these other things that have been driven, by the local member as well as, everyone else. And I mean, nothing's ever changed. So, you've got to keep pushing that barrier because, if you give up the fight, you'll end up with nothing.
What about you, Janessa Bidgood? I know a couple of the Cloncurry locals have been very loud in this space as well, trying to get some sort of relief on the flight prices. Do you see a role for the state government in trying to make this more affordable?
I definitely do, but I don't know that that's where they need to address the problem. I think I know it's a bigger problem than that, and I don't know where you start it with it, but population growth is the problem. So, you know, everything gets cheaper the more people that are using it. Once you get more people living here and you get more people using planes, then suddenly everything starts to get cheaper, and it has a flow-on effect to everything else in our communities where, you know, our schools, our community groups, our childcare, everything has a flow-on effect from population growth. And we've already seen people trying to action the flight argument, and they get a little bit of relief here and there, and then as soon as they drop the argument, it goes straight back to where it was. So clearly jumping up and down about the issue is not fixing it, so we need to address, you know, the root of the problem, basically.
I suppose the population growth argument is a bit of a chicken and egg scenario as well, because we have seen that population growth in the last couple of months, and now it's very, very hard to get a rental. There's been stories of people, you know, having to buy houses, you know, because they can't find anywhere to rent.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, now's the tipping point where we need to increase population. And I guess people, they lack certainty in the fact that they're not going to run out and build a bunch more houses because they see this region as an up and down centre where eventually it'll fall again, because that's what we've created with mining. And I think to stop that, you need to increase population slowly and steadily. It's not a, you know, kill FIFO overnight and suddenly everyone lives here. It's a slow process that increases growth, and then you will see services increase, which then generates community jobs as well. And, you know, people have a bit of certainty in the fact that if they buy a house here in 10 years' time, it's probably going to be worth more, not less, because they've, you know, they've hit the pit of the market now again.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Janessa Bidgood, Roland Shebig and Mick Tully. And Ali, these issues are no doubt going to become an election issue in the coming months, but probably also an issue that will be discussed in the coming years and probably even decades.